You shouldn't have dropped this on us.
I know.
When
we were
not recording.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Okay. I should have held on to that.
I hit the record button. But I can see why it's called Ten of Swords.
I do too, and it will become apparent later. But also, it's X of Swords.
I do not care.
Ten of Swords.
I don't care how well it fits. I don't care if it ties everything together and suddenly makes the stuff I don't like good. It is X of Swords because this is the X-Men.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
Yeah, it's not the Ten Men.
Yes,
it's not the Ten Men.
I agree, and I think Hickman is wrong on this. It is Ten of it's not Ten of Swords. No! I already fell into it.
It's the Roman numeral.
It is no. I don't care what Marvel says. It's X of Swords.
I'm gonna continue just calling it X of Swords.
And same.
That's just the way it's going to be.
Same.
I'm not going to acknowledge.
I'm going to apologize.
No one has ever called it Ten of Swords ever.
I'll apologize for it once when we start, and then I'm gonna keep calling it X of Swords.
I've been so excited about this event. You kind of ruined it for me. Now, right at the doorstep.
The whole event. Done. Get rid of it. We're throwing it in the trash.
Ten of Swords. Okay. Should we start?
Yeah, we should probably clap.
Okay. What time do we want to clap on?
45?
Yeah.
Sure. Hello and welcome to another episode of Study of X, the bi-weekly podcast where we cover the Krakoan era of X-Men comics. Not X-Men, or not Krakoan podcast, I can't even remember my mess up.
I mean, they're like the same thing, X-Men and Krakoa, they are one of
them. That did not make any sense. You're devolving.
Okay.
It's getting worse, try again.
Alright. Welcome to another episode of Study of X, the bi-weekly podcast where we discuss the Krakoan era of X-Men comics.
Perfect.
Nailed it.
There we go. Nailed it in one.
Let's go.
Yes. I am your host, Tim, and with me as always is Sergio.
Hi, hello. My throat hurts. It's been a rough week. I'm ready for this episode to be like an hour long. I believe in us.
And Chris, I did it in a different order this time.
You did. It threw me off.
It's fine.
But I'm also very excited for anyone listening to this, looking at the timestamp, going like, oh, wow, they really did not hit an hour at all, did they?
I believe it's going to be the case.
Yep.
Nice. I appreciate the belief and, you know, being optimistic.
It's nice to believe stuff. Please
judge us. I am the one who edits this podcast. I'll make it happen.
That's true. You could just cut out an entire issue of Excalibur, and we would never know.
It's not like anyone would notice.
I believe people would notice, but...
I think people would notice with Excalibur, but you could cut this issue of X-Force and be okay.
We got a couple of issues this week. We got X-Force number 12 and Excalibur number 11 and 12. Our last set of issues before the big X of Swords, which we learned is not called that.
Look, Marvel says it's called Ten of Swords. I don't know what to tell you.
Yep. Three issues this week. You want to get into them?
Yeah. Let's get started here with X-Force number 12, the Cerebro Sword. This was written in September of 2020. And is still written by Benjamin Percy. And sorry, not written in September, but released. So Tim gave us a bit of background last time, as we ended with Mikhail Rasputin standing over a dying Kid Omega. And just to give a bit more about him, he was first introduced in Uncanny X-Men number 285 in 1991. He is the brother of Colossus and Ileana, also known as Magic. He briefly lost his sanity and tried to take over the world as he went in and out of being lost in space and a different dimension for a while. Big mood. He is also, his disappearance is also the reason that Colossus was able to discover his mutant powers, because Colossus had a bit of a hard time with his brother gone. But for Mikhail, his mutant ability is to change subatomic particles, which to create portals, fire energy, and even change matter itself. So he's definitely on the stronger end as far as mutant powers go.
Yeah.
And the only other thing we really need to know about him is he was part of the Cosmonaut program in Russia for a while, which is how he got lost. And he was actually kind of an ally for a while when he got back, before the aforementioned losing his sanity and then trying to take over the world. And ever since then, he's kind of been on the villain side of things.
Yeah, I mean,
can I make a quick note about this being the most ridiculous, like a contender for the most ridiculous cover so far?
Oh yeah, this one.
There are so many layers to this.
There's a lot going on. I think it's also the tank in the background, because it's over designed.
It's the tanks. It's the Tetris cover art in the background.
Yeah,
it's
very busy.
Uh huh.
Yeah, it's very, very busy.
I don't even know who these guys are.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's like they designed some, like, Russian X-Men that didn't end up actually happening.
Yeah, well,
these guys don't show up in the issue.
Yeah, no. I don't know who these people are. I agree.
I mean, they did show up in that issue of Wolverine, you know, when he was going to the secret sea base that Russia had.
Are these them? They don't look like them. I thought those were just kind of guys.
I mean, they were guys, but they had the same, like, red meat-looking suits. I think that's supposed to invoke it. I don't know why their heads are different colors. That's a new one to me. The last time they just all kind of looked like generic Caucasian dudes.
Yeah, I think these are mutants. Like, those look like mutant heads. Those are like the heads you give some, like, random mutants standing, like, in a background shot of Krakoa. Who are these people?
I could not tell you, because we don't meet them.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
All right.
Yeah, let's jump into it past the cover. So we're starting back up in Russia, in Moscow. Like I said, Mikhail was standing over a dying Kid Omega, where he reveals he's a pretty diehard Russian nationalist and is very much country over mutant identity. And he is going to use any bit of Kid Omega that he can to bolster his country against this new threat of Krakoa.
So, okay, here's my question. What does Mikhail do, like, in the Russian government? Like, what is his position?
That's actually, like, a good point. I don't know. Unless he's just, you know, he's just a guy. He's just a citizen of Russia who's like, yeah, I'm going to just help out my country. While wearing a cape and stealing a sword. I don't know, honestly.
Yeah,
because now I'm thinking about it, but I'm also thinking of, like, future issues we haven't gotten to yet.
And I don't know.
I don't have an answer to that. I don't know. Just, you know, he is with Russia and Russia is bad.
Okay.
That's about as far as we're getting.
All right.
Yep, that's really it.
Yes.
Yeah, all right.
But hey, you know, to remember that also not only Russia bad, but Beast also bad, because we're back at the point and Beast is asking Sage to hurry up and stop crying over this possible skull fracture and concussion. You need to get back to work.
To pull it back a little bit, there's a page here where Mikhail is driving Kid Omega's body on the ground toward just the most stereotypical looking Russian buildings I have ever seen.
Yes.
And I just want to give a shout out to that. That's very funny. All right. Back at the point.
Yeah, back at the point. Sage needs to get back to work, so she gets kind of this really kind of neat plant helmet backpack thing that helps her with this concussion that she now has from being attacked by, remember, mini meat men.
Yeah.
But she needs to get back to work.
Yeah, it's Beast. It's like a little plant thing that is. I guess the point of it is to kind of hold your brain in place. I don't know why they just had this in case somebody had a concussion, but they did. But I do like this scene. I feel like it's very clear at showing, like, Beast is giving her this not out of concern, but as like a, hey, throw this on so you can get back to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. He's almost kind of a contrast to Mikhail right here, where it's country over mutant, where he doesn't really care for the individuals. He's here to make sure Krakoa is okay. And they need to figure out where the Cerebro Sword went and where possibly this could have come from. Which, thankfully, yeah, they figure out pretty quickly that the only weird gate travel was to Moscow. And Kid Omega did leave a very bright calling card by writing Mikhail's name in the ground with his psychic powers.
Yeah. So, figured that one out pretty quick.
Yes. No real mystery there. Unlike, you know, when Domino went missing and nobody really knew where she was.
Yeah. Back at the, at a Zeno lab, we're getting back to this plot line. It's the man with a peacock tattoo doing some, surgery with his, mass people hanging out around him.
His big bunch of masked anti-mutant friends. Where, you know, forcing evolution is okay. Natural evolution that leads to mutants is not okay. So, that's what he does. He forces his big bodyguard friend here to kind of graft this giant bone and skin claw onto his arm. And is now, you know, giving a speech about how great this is and how they can now fight against mutants a lot better now that his friend has this big meat claw.
Yeah. I don't think he knows how genetics work. No. I don't think that's going to pass on through his genes.
No, I don't think so either. I think it's just a one and done.
Yeah, they do have some, like, people in glass tubes. So maybe those have a better chance of, like, being actual alt evolutions.
Yeah, but, like,
but if, yeah, if, not grafting an arm.
If you get a robot arm, your child will not be born with a robot arm.
Yeah, that is not how that works.
So he's trying to carve out a new species. The party is quickly crashed by Mikhail.
Yep, who is here with the lovely Cerebro Sword, who just kind of knew where these guys were hanging out. Which is a bit of a problem considering Mikhail himself is a mutant. And they do not like mutants.
Yeah, it's very interesting how hostile this interaction is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very clear immediately that these two do not like each other, and by these two I do mean the band with the peacock tattoo.
Yeah. The big dude, oh well, no, we aren't gonna get to that yet. Krakoa.
I know, I also thought that was like right away, and that's what I put in my notes, and I was like, wait a second, there is like a brief side story going.
Yep, we have a third cutaway in 3 pages.
Yes.
Cutaway back to Krakoa.
And this time,
there's a moose. Pink one.
It's
like a rhino moose. It's really cool looking.
Yeah, it's this neat looking thing. But it gets very quickly killed and dismembered by Omega Red, which the last time we saw him, he was dropping Wolverine off to the vampires. That's not important right now. All you have to know is that he is just eating this moose.
Yeah. Specifically, Beast is capturing him to see if he has any relation to Mikhail. Because, you know, Mega Red, Russian. Wrong country, Beast, but you tried.
Yeah, not the best look for him, and it's the same thing here with Beast, where he immediately comes in very antagonistic, so you do know where this is going.
Yeah, Omega Red's just immediately wrapped in vines, and
is going to be taken away somewhere, where we don't see where, because we are going to hard cut back to the Zeno lab.
Yeah, where the big man is falling into a vat.
Mm-hmm. Because of the simple trick of move aside when he runs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Mikhail has this whole speech here that he gives the entire fight, where he basically says, not all mutants are for Krakoa, and mutants are not the problem, and your prejudice is entirely misaimed. The problem should be with Krakoa, because as a country and a nation, they are far more scary.
Yeah, it's... But, sorry,
I don't think this makes a lot of sense. People were prejudiced against the mutants before Krakoa, so... And all of that talk about the Homo superior eventually overtaking humanity and all of that, like, exists outside of Krakoa. That's been, like, a pretty central part of the lore all this time. So I don't know. I don't know that this would alleviate my fears if I was, like, predisposed to be xenophobic against or, like, racist against mutants.
Yeah. I think it... I mean, it really is just a way for Mikhail to get this alliance started that he wants, because he's like, I'm a mutant. You shouldn't hate me. You should hate the other ones.
Yeah,
but I don't know, because it's not like I would believe these Sino people to suddenly go, you're right, it's all about geopolitics.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, it's
that's
very,
where my hate goes.
Yeah, it's very odd that, like, it's like, you know, this is a hate group, and dude just comes in here and is just like, no, you're hating them wrong.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, like,
your hate is wrong. You gotta work with the mutants against Krakoa.
Yeah, the real enemy is Krakoa here. And yeah, you probably are going to forge an alliance because they do hate Krakoa, which is, you know, a bunch of mutants, but I don't know if you're going to sell them. Yeah, I don't know if you're going to sell them on this, buddy.
No. but our big bone claw friend does get turned to stone by Mikhail and then shattered by the Cerebro Sword. So that kind of ends this little fight here. Before we hard cut again.
I would say calling it a fight is generous. This is Mikhail just kind of stomping this man.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true.
But yeah, with the Cerebro Sword, he shatters him. But yeah, working with mutants against Krakoa is his goal. But yeah, we're back in the flower farm.
Yep, back in the Savage Lands, where Colossus and Kayla, which I looked her up, she is new for X-Force here. She's a brand new character just for the story. So she doesn't have much of a background to her. But the two of them are having a lovely time together before being interrupted yet again by Beast, along with Wolverine and Domino.
Yeah. Also here to ask questions. You know, why isn't magic being questioned?
I was thinking the same thing as I was going through this, especially once we get to the end. I'm like, hang on, we're missing a very important Russian mutant here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I could probably take a guess at, like, the meta reasons behind it. You know, she's in.
She's doing stuff.
You know,
I honestly would buy the fact that, like, she's kind of untouchable because she's a war captain as well.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like she, just operating off of Beast's logic here, I feel like that's more of a red flag than Omega Red.
Yes. Yeah, same. I mean, I kind of even would have appreciated even, like, a little blurb somewhere of, like, hey, here's a list of mutants I want to question about Russia, and magic is on there and then crossed out.
Yeah.
With like, some little, like, blurb from Beast about how, you know, trying to quarter her is impossible. But, yeah, no, it's very, very weird, especially as we're going to see what Beast's actual goal here is.
Yeah.
So, but one small thing I wanted to note that I really liked is the second Beast pops up in between Colossus and Kayla, Colossus immediately turns his armor on and just gets covered in metal, which... Same. If Beast just showed up, especially the Beast at this point, I would also be on guard.
Yeah. The scene kind of plays out about how you would expect. Wolverine and Domino are playing good cops here, where Beast is the bad cop, but probably should be on the defensive with Beast at the moment.
Yeah, Colossus does agree to go, though, because he just wants to be left alone, and if doing this means he does eventually get to be left alone, then hey, great.
Oh, also Kayla gets a gun pointed at her head, so like,
yes!
That's great.
Yes, like when you said, you know, Domino is also playing good cop, I see it, but Domino pointing a gun at Kayla's head, I was like, that's a little far.
Yeah.
Especially towards Colossus and getting him to do something.
Yep, this guy's just out here in his flower field.
Yeah, yeah. He's just planting flowers.
Yeah, planting flowers, which are also really good medicine, you know, living a simple farmer life. And then here comes the CIA to ruin everything.
Yeah. But as he's about to walk through the gate willingly, Beast is like, hey, you want to put on these handcuffs? You could rip through them, but you should just put them on, just, you know, for show. Mm-hmm. And then walks through the portal, and they have just a large gathering of mutants here.
Yeah, there is quite a large grouping here. You've got Nightcrawler, Storm, Banshee, Jubilee. I think that's Cable right there. I see Rock Slide in the background. There's a lot of folks who have just seen Colossus in handcuffs walk through a portal.
Then we immediately cut to a data page about the Traitor's Parade.
Mm-hmm. Which now look. Beast has been reading a biography on Donald Rumsfeld, and he thinks he's got some good ideas.
You should never say that man had some good ideas. And Beast decided, you know what, I am going to do that.
Yeah.
Beast said, I see something here.
Treating your own people as if they were prisoners, like in Jeremy Bentham's Panopticon, that's a great idea.
People need fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How else would you keep the populace in line if you don't remind them every now and again through a very showy show of force that you are in charge and nobody's above the law?
Okay, explain what you're talking about.
Well, if you go back a page, you do see Colossus with handcuffs, even though he did nothing wrong.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, explain the reference, just, you know, for the viewers and for me, who doesn't know what you're talking about either.
Which part? The Panopticon, or?
All of it.
Well, Sergio, do you want to start?
Beast is going to partner up with Mojo to get Fox News affiliate going on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
On Krakoa.
Yeah, like... yeah. Yeah, no, that does sound in line with this Beast.
And
I think this is them dipping their hand way too far.
This is ridiculous.
Way farther than it usually has.
Yes.
This is jumping the shark a bit too much for me.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised they went so hard on it. I know we've joked about the CIA bit before, but this kind of tips it on the other side where I'm going like, come on guys, tone it down.
Yes. Yes, maybe somebody should tell Beast, hey, cool it. Maybe calm down just a little bit.
If you look at this gathering of mutants, like, you're doing this in front of Storm?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
like, are you sure?
Like Storm of all people, which, you know, the only reason she does not say anything here is because she's not part of the X-Force writing, you know, team that's going on here. But, like, in any other setting, no, she would have kicked Beast's ass for doing this to Colossus.
Yeah, I don't buy that half of these people would be here for this spectacle.
Yeah, like Nightcrawler.
And then
we've got
on the next page. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. We've got Kurt.
Yeah, which kind of makes me wonder what Beast sent out as, like, a heads up. You know, did he tell people what was going to happen or just say, hey, come hang out here. Something might happen.
Yeah,
we're going to have a public shaming.
Yeah, we're going to have a just come here and just look at him as he's walking through the gate. But yeah, the Panopticon. Yeah, they kind
of this page with all of the people like staring at Colossus and then you know the one-two combo of this log page where he just goes, America's crime rates are significantly down due to doorbell cameras, traffic cameras, cell phone cameras.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's
the fear of being seen overrides it.
Yeah, Beast said 1984 was pretty cool.
We will make their detention a spectacle.
Yes.
I want it to be a parade.
Yes. Beast saw America post 9/11 and said, I want that. that's like, the kind of surveillance state that I need at Krakoa.
Yeah, there's some good ideas in those.
I did cheer for the next page. I think if anyone's going to immediately gut punch Beast, it has to be Wolverine.
Yeah, yes. So Wolverine,
he's the one to do it. He's the one who's been. I've been outspoken about my my total trust in Wolverine, and he's demonstrated that my trust was well placed.
Yeah.
With
so
this, with this punch.
Just to put it in context a little bit, Wolverine and Domino were very clearly not told about this. As soon as they go through the gate, Wolverine questions him. Beast gives him back some, "I'm just doing my job, man." And Wolverine just turns around and punches him in the gut.
Yeah, it like lifts him off his feet, kind of a punch.
Yeah, and then immediately claws out, chases away the crowd.
Yeah. Hero.
Yeah, no, absolute hero of the moment.
Just you're not pulling this shit, Beast. Like it's good. Like I like Wolverine.
I know Wolverine's got his own shit to deal with. We've seen as much in his series, but every time he's got like a little time to think about what's happening with Krakoa, he's being like in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like he's always being concerned about the right things and he's been asking the right questions. Just no one listens to him.
Yeah.
I don't think
but right
Wolverine...
now he knows it's time for action and he goes into action.
Yeah, when Wolverine knows he's justified, he will act. But I think one of the issues with Wolverine is I don't know. The impression I got is I don't know if Wolverine realizes he's making good points.
Yeah. I agree with that.
I would agree with that too. You know, he's seeing the house of cards starting to like wobble and he's like, am I seeing that? Maybe not.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, you know, this and this, but what do I know? I'm just a grumpy loner. And it's like, nope, you're right.
No, you are speaking truths. Beast is he's not doing well.
No, he's not.
Really not. But
back to the
Xeno
the lab.
Mikhail offers the man with the peacock tattoo the Cerebro Sword as a gesture of cooperation. Mikhail wants to know what is in the weapon because it did used to be one of the Cerebro helmets, so therefore, theoretically, it should have all of the data within it that a helmet should have. But
I love this interaction. He's just like, yeah, here you go. Here's the sword with all this data. And he's like, oh, okay, how do we get it? And he's like, oh.
I don't know. Shrug.
That's how it goes.
Yeah. It's like, figure it out, man. Like...
Yeah, he's just like, hey, you're good at clones and weird flesh science. Hopefully you can figure it out.
Yeah.
Yep. And here's an extra freebie.
Yeah, he just gives him Kid Omega and...
Poor guy.
Yeah.
I actually do kind of feel bad for Kid Omega.
Yeah, I don't know if he's alive or not, but yeah.
I'd be shocked if he was alive at this point. He seemed like he was dying in Moscow.
Yeah. Still got a body. But yeah, back on the point, and Jean's talking about being real hung up on this Ten of Swords thing.
Okay. Yes, this X of Swords crossover that is coming up. She says there are far more important things she needs to do, but Wolverine only trusts Jean to do what they are about to ask her to do, which is to look through Colossus and Omega Red's mind to see if they're telling the truth or not about Mikhail Rasputin.
Yeah. And, after that we get another data page here.
Yep. And this is a retelling of Beast coming to Colossus in the Savage Lands. However, there is a section at the bottom that is crossed out where Colossus, instead of agreeing to go, instead beats Beast to death with his hands.
Yeah, it's, And we got the same little Russian sign-off thing that we've had from a lot of these previously. But yeah, it's like a recap of the events that happened. But yeah, there are events there that didn't happen that are crossed out.
Yeah. So again, just a little bit more mystery there.
Yep.
So, but that is the end of X-Force number 12. The next time we do see X-Force, we will be in the middle of X of Swords. So we'll get to see what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, the next time we see all of these issues, we'll be in that event. But yeah, so we move on to our last two here with Excalibur.
Yes.
Unless anybody has any more X-Force thoughts.
That's a good question. Not really. X-Force is X-Force.
I think it tips its hand a bit too hard for me.
Yeah.
I do enjoy seeing Wolverine gut punch the heck out of Beast.
Yeah, Beast is, I don't know if it was a gradual fall off a cliff or more just like a straight plunge, but yeah, we're, I don't know.
It really does feel, I come by thinking that Beast has been like chomping at the bit to have an excuse to do something like this.
Yeah.
Like with all of the incursions in like Central America.
Yes, you can't forget that he also, you know, killed almost an entire nation by messing with plant technology.
Yeah.
He's really let himself go a little bit.
Yeah, he really Beast is someone who just like looked at the CIA and said, like, I wanna do that.
It's just it's
like all of it. Like,
it's such a wild thing too, because I mean we're all watching X-Men 97. And to go from that Beast, who is like a fuzzy grandpa, to this Beast, it's like two completely different characters.
I believe X-Men 97 Beast has denim.
He's got the CIA.
I don't trust those eyes.
I don't know. I trust him.
But yeah, so want to get into Excalibur?
Yeah, let's go and talk about the mythical British.
Yeah. The green people.
Yes. So for Excalibur number 11, verse 11, Blood of the Changeling, this is still written by Teenie Howard and was released in August of 2020. It has been a minute since we saw Excalibur, so just to give a very brief reminder, the last time we saw them, the crew had made their way into Otherworld under Apocalypse's guidance to create a permanent portal that would allow mutants free entrance into this magic realm. However, they are being denied by Opal Saturnine. She is the controller of Otherworld. And as the Excalibur team is going to her castle to ask why she's doing this, they shoot down Shogo. And the last issue we had actually kind of covered a bit of a side issue going on, where we learned that King Jaime Braddock is breaking realities to backfill them and create his own Captain Britain Corps. So, kind of a lot, but that was where we were last time for this.
Yeah.
I have so many questions, and I don't particularly care for having any of those answered. This is such nothing, like, nothing story for me now. Why are they... Okay. Why are they trying to create a portal in Saturnine's flying fortress?
Because Apocalypse said it would be cool.
Yeah.
That's about it. The only one who really wants it is Apocalypse. And Betsy is just kind of brought in as, well, I'm Captain Britain now, so Saturnine should work with me, but isn't.
Yeah. It's basically Apocalypse just... real into magic right now. Just thinks they should have a direct gate here.
This man loves his X's and his circles.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, that's about all I can give you for that one.
But yeah, so we start out with some people in green.
Yes. What look like to be druids, as we will quickly find out, they are talking about a dragon that is not doing too well and wants its mother. And then we do see Jubilee in the bottom of a tree jail cell, looking very sad and wanting to get out, but being trapped inside by these druids as she is very, very upset.
Yeah. And this is quickly broken up by the arrival of Excalibur, which is at this point just Captain Britain, Rogue, Gambit, and Richter, who are trying to get them to give.
Yes, they kind of break in, not really saying much, and beginning their assault. And before we can get into more of it, we're actually thrown into a data page that explains the differences between the priestesses of Saturnine. We have seen the white priestesses, those are the ones that shot down Shogo, and generally are stronger. They take rules directly from Saturnine. And then we have the green priestesses, who we just saw, who follow her teachings and intent, but not her direct orders. And they much prefer neutrality and healing and finding compromise than they would to outright vicious annihilation.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the idea of...
what is it like?
I don't know. the idea of like, oh yeah, we're following the intent is like, that's like an argument you make for like how you read the Constitution, not how you like take orders from an alive person.
Yes, it's very interesting. Like, I like it as a piece of world building because I think it's fun. I love world building. But when you really try and think about it, it would be like, you know, following the intent of a president or a prime minister, but not them directly.
Yeah, but it's like, they can just tell you.
I can kind of say it. It's like as if Protestantism arised while Jesus was still alive.
Yeah, like, yeah, okay.
Catholic interpretation of Jesus was still alive.
Yeah, but like that would be... I don't know. That feels like it would be strange, but I guess like I feel there is
an element here, which is Saturnine is literally like a divine being, so you cannot deny the fact that she is divine and embodies some sort of divine will. So if you disagree with her, the most you can do is acknowledge the divinity of her existence while trying to deny the parts that you disagree with. So, yeah, I can kind of see how this arises.
Yeah, it's
they,
just...
They cannot say she's not a goddess or what have you. She is.
Yes, she's very important and very powerful. And the title does change because Merlin was Omniversal Magistrix or whatever the word was. So it has changed, but it seems like that position always needs to be filled.
Right.
Yeah, it's fine. You know, it's just a heretical sect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a neat point of world building.
I miss the druids, though. Bring the druids back.
Yeah, they were cool. I like those British druids.
But Psylocke, They finally, you know, they apparently make peace with the Green Priestesses, and Psylocke comes in to tell Jubilee, like, hey, it's all chill.
Yes, which Jubilee immediately says, hey, did you murder all of them for me? Because they hurt my baby. Which, I'm here for this, like, very murderous Jubilee who is not gonna sit down for Shogo getting hurt.
Yeah,
I say let her go off.
Yeah, this conversation's kind of interesting. I like how they just have to kind of be like, hey, no, it's these aren't the people. Like, we can't kill them.
Yeah, and, you know, they kind of have to talk Jubilee down and tell her she needs to calm down, and then they will let her out, which after one final outburst, she does, and she just wants to go see her son.
Yeah.
So, which she very quickly does, and Shogo, as a very large dragon, which I still love, his wing's pretty messed up, but they're doing their best that they can to heal him. And in the meantime, the rest of the group decides that they really need to figure out why Saturnine is denying them, you know, even though Betsy is now Captain Britain, who should rightfully have a place up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, very wordy. I forgot Excalibur has a lot of dialogue going with it. But there's a lot of, you know, character interactions and everything going on.
Yeah, this is just them being concerned for what would happen if Shogo went through the portal with the big wound he has.
Yeah, that's kind of the crux of this here, is they don't want to, they think about bringing Shogo home, and they're like, we don't know if we want to do that with wound that can kill him. Yeah.
The wound is bigger than his small body.
Yeah.
So that would be bad.
Well, they think it could be bad. They don't know how this will work. Wound, yeah.
Yeah, there's a 50-50 chance the wound just goes and becomes small, and the 50-50 chance that the It's literally bigger than a child's body.
Yeah. Yes, and that would be really bad. Well, so much better to stay.
Is the damage proportional? Who can tell? Maybe let's not risk it.
Yeah, let's not figure that out right now.
Mm-hmm. Then Richter goes and has a wild druid trip.
Yes.
During the night.
You know, he can't sleep, which, hey, you know what? I get it. But I also don't wander off into the woods, find a mysterious crystal surrounded by druids, and then just kind of trip for a little bit. I don't do that.
Imagine if your trip connected you to Apocalypse, though.
That could either be good or bad, and I'm not sure which one it would be. But these druids here do explain that Richter is very much welcome because he is a child of the earth and connected to it. Yeah. And they again explain that old crystals and old bones hold power, which is something you're going to have to remember. But as Richter gets closer to the crystal, he feels the power overwhelm him, and Apocalypse, even being on a different plane of existence, is able to find and communicate with him, which is where Richter gets him up to speed on everything that happened.
Yeah, then it's story time.
Yep, we're back to our favorite time, which is story time with Apocalypse. And
yep,
here
and,
is, this is where he's going to explain what the externals are. Which, before I get into that, Tim, do you know anything about the externals?
I know Celine was a member of the Hellfire Club and was an external. She was around quite a bit. She's not a good person. And then we also have, at one point, they told Cannonball he was an external, which is very funny. I don't think that lasted long. And I think at one point, Sunspot teamed up with one of them, but I don't remember who that was.
Those are all correct. You get full points.
Well, yep. Cool.
So, the externals, they were introduced in X-Force number 10 in 1992. They are also called the High Lords, which is what Apocalypse is going to call them here. But they are a subspecies of mutants who are truly immortal and connected to one another. If they die, they will come back to life eventually. They can always sense one another and also bring each other together with just a thought. So because of that, they try not to actually work together at times unless they really need to. The only way an external can be properly killed and not come back is if they are killed by another member. And when that happens, that member and the rest of the externals absorb the power of the dead mutant and grow stronger.
Unless you put your mutant power into a gem.
Yes, unless you cheat the system, which is what Kandra does. And this is actually the story that Apocalypse is going to tell. So the group of the externals is pretty consistent. The members of them, which most of them we're not going to really care for, is Absalom, Burke, Kandra, Cruel, Gideon, Nicodemus, Saul, Celine, and Apocalypse.
Who is Merc in here?
He should be later?
I don't know if we've seen that guy, but I could be wrong. They don't stick around too long.
No, they don't. They're kind of going to go pretty fast. But
I like how there's one guy who's just called Gideon.
Same.
Yeah, same.
It's fun. But they are somewhat like a mutant Illuminati, as they have played in the shadows for years and years, and have operated... go ahead.
The other external knowledge I know is I think Kandra led the Thieves Guild at one point, which is where Gambit's from.
Yes, and that is where their connections...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's referenced later.
Yeah.
Yes. But just for like a general timeline for these guys... They could have operated anywhere between 17,000 years ago, which is how old Celine is, up into the modern day. So they have been around for a very, very long time. There was also a really funny tidbit at the end of when I was reading about everything. They are known to have had active involvements in the JFK assassination and the American Revolution. So you can thank Apocalypse for those.
I am... pretty sure of these mutants here, the one that is the most important, that isn't Apocalypse is Celine.
Yes, you would be correct. She's been a villain for a long time. She is very powerful. I want to say a lot of her powers are almost vampire-like, and that she can drain people's souls, but I might be wrong.
Yeah, it's something like that.
So, but she was also involved a lot in Nova Roma, which we've met before and we'll never have to see again. But you can just know she did her best to bring that place down.
Yeah, I think there was a Captain America run that was happening, like, as Krakoa was just starting out, that had her as a villain working with Hydra. So, yeah, not a great person.
Nope. But all you need to know about Apocalypse's story is that Kandra, one of them, did want to keep her powers for herself. So they all performed a ritual where they sealed away her soul into a gem. So when she does truly die, her power does not get spread around the rest of the externals. This is important because it taught Apocalypse how coven magic works, which is going to be used pretty soon.
This is a lot of dump here.
Yes, there's a lot. There's a lot of story that gets a payoff in the next issue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But once we get this out of the way, we're back to Otherworld, where Jubilee and Shogo are going to stay behind with the Green Priestesses so Shogo can heal, while the Excalibur crew makes their way over to the Citadel by burrowing underground with Richter's powers.
They literally use dig.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
It was extremely effective.
Yeah.
I mean,
somewhat.
I mean, they got there, you know.
Yeah, they did get there.
Yeah, Saturnine was not expecting it. And very quickly, Richter's like, well, all we need to do is make a gateway, right? So plant the gateway in the ground, and I'll make us a big dirt bridge up onto the Citadel so we can get it going.
Yep. Battle rages for like 3 pages or so.
Yeah, we get this done quick. We are full Excalibur pacing here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of talking for very little. You know, there's 3 pages about him getting the land bridge up, but he gets a land bridge up. You just say it like that. But still as pretty as always. I really like the artist for this because everything looks great. And once the gate is planted and ready to go, Richter's like, hey, we need to go let Apocalypse know that this is done. And Gambit's like, well, why don't you go tell him? So Richter goes through the portal, immediately forgetting that the last time they put a portal into Otherworld, it had to be activated by centuries-old mutant bones turned to powerful crystals.
Yeah.
So he's kind of stuck in a red vortex, and it does not look like a good time.
Yeah, immediately screams for Apocalypse, who responds with, I can hear you, which I think is very funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, man, you don't gotta shout.
Mm-hmm. I do also like, because he is saying Apocalypse's mutant name, and it's a very specific image here, I don't know how else to describe it. But there's one where he says it clearly, and then the other one, as he keeps falling, it gets jumbled into just a mess, and it looks fantastic.
Yeah.
It's fun. Yeah, like, scrambled.
Mm-hmm. So, but Apocalypse has him kind of center himself, and whatever happens next, we are not going to see in this issue.
You know, I will say this about Excalibur. The costumes are cool.
Yes.
The costumes are cool.
Yeah, costumes are great. I think everybody looks wonderful.
Yeah.
I like Gambit in Rogue, especially.
Yeah, everybody just looking like they are in high fantasy, which is the vibe. So, but yeah, Saturnine walks up, says, hey, what you doing here?
Yep. And Betsy's like, I'm Captain Britain. Why don't you talk to me?
Yeah. And, before the issue ends, we get a little epilogue here of Gambit and Rogue just kind of walking around the castle.
Yep, Saturnine wants to talk to Betsy alone, so the other two are kind of left to their own devices, where Rogue immediately says, hey Gambit, you should go steal things, which he gladly accepts and decides to go do.
Yeah, finds some playing cards, and more importantly, he finds Kandra's gem.
Dun dun dun. Well, at the end of this issue, it is just a red gem. But yes, it is Kandra's gem.
I feel like it's very obvious what it is.
I agree. I think so too. But it is like a, it's a mystery.
Yeah. Kind of thing. But yeah. So our next issue also has a kind of a cool cover here.
Yes, I actually really like this one. It's Saturnine holding Betsy as if she was a chess piece, and then Apocalypse over Saturnine holding her like she's a chess piece. Very fun.
I have to admit, for a second, I thought, what is Emma doing here?
It's okay. For a second, I thought, what is Omega Red doing? controlling Saturnine.
I'm glad we all had a bit of confusion there, because I also saw Emma, so... Yes. but I believe this is also our first issue that is specifically tagged as a X of Swords prelude. All the others have been the road to. So this is a direct, hey, this is right beforehand.
Yeah.
So this is Excalibur number 12, verse 12, the beginning. This was released in September of 2020 and still written by Teeny Howard. We are going to open up here actually on Krakoa. At the Eternal Caldera, Apocalypse has called his fellow externals together to kind of, at first it seems like just spout philosophy at them about how their strength as a community and their ability to come back to life is now no longer a rare trait that only they possess, but something that mutants as a whole now possess.
Real quick, because I think this is our first time seeing it, can you tell us what the eternal caldera is?
It is just a very, very big, semi-dormant volcano on Krakoa.
Yeah, it's just, they're just kind of hanging out in like a smoldering crater.
Yeah, with lava pits nearby.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's got good vibes.
I like how we get confirmation here that being... as long-lived as all of these people are, does not make you immune to Apocalypse's bullshit.
Yes. I also like that.
They have
that.
Zero time for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I love this little intro so much. Apocalypse just walking down the stairs and being like, what brings you here? And they're like, bro, you did. Like...
yeah, they're like, shut up. It was you. What do you want? And instead of answering the question, he's like... well, let me talk to you a bit about our history.
Yeah, there's so much here where Apocalypse is just kind of sprouting off his bullshit, and they're like, don't play that game with him, please. Like, he will keep going if you humor him.
Yes, it's really funny to see nobody put up with it.
Yeah.
So, but I do like his little speech here, you know, because he's been doing this throughout all of Excalibur. But I like his focus that mutants' power is their community and ability to come together and work together and to, you know, dream still that they can do so much instead of man who has, you know, separated themselves, don't really have a community anymore. I like his focus on that. I think it's really unique, especially for him. But it's a really fun and interesting aspect of mutantdom as a whole that I haven't seen anyone point out until he's really done it.
Yeah.
So, the problem with this is Apocalypse is saying all of this because he would hope it would sway his fellow externals so that they wouldn't fight back with what he's about to do next, because no longer are the externals special to mutants. In fact, they're just sort of there now. They're like everybody else. Their only interesting tidbit about them is that they have really, really old bones. And we know exactly what you can do with very old mutant bones.
Yeah, Apocalypse wants to sacrifice them all to turn into a gate.
Woo!
So is this his workaround for the werewolves not working out?
I think so. I think if the werewolves actually did work out, he would not have to have killed the externals, which I think is really funny.
Yeah.
It would be funny to tell Betsy that.
Or Rachel that for.
Oh,
that
yes,
matter.
And Rachel that too. So, but hey, you know what? In exchange, we did get Amazing Baby. So I'm kind of okay with this trade.
Oh, yeah.
So we do get a quick data page here about the High Lords. This is essentially what I said last issue about what their abilities are with their resurrection and their communion with each other. And then we also get the names of those that are here. The one that is not here is the one that Tim mentioned. Burke is nowhere to be seen.
Burke, okay. I thought you were saying Merc. Yeah.
No, it's Burke. Yeah. Don't know where he is.
Just but I've didn't feel it coming.
I've learned that kind of, you know, honestly, good choice for him. But we're going to come back to Richter. He is still in some sort of red hell here and is being crushed. He is still calling out to Apocalypse, but Apocalypse is simply not answering. So Richter takes it upon himself to free himself using his powers. And we learn he was just under the surface in the caldera, and he now seemingly has the power to control magma.
Yeah, good for him.
But I also, Apocalypse, again, the man loves to hear himself speak. Just as soon as Richter bursts out of the ground, he's like, behold, this is a mutant who is not a High Lord, but now he can be.
Oh, he's talking some, like, I would be slightly offended if I was Richter.
Yes. Yeah, because he's like, oh, I found this guy when he was, like, at his lowest. He was powerless. He was awful. But now...
he was now miserable.
Now he's better.
Yeah, and, like, he's not wrong. Richter did not seem to be having a good time of it, but, like, man.
That's rough.
Yeah.
Like, Apocalypse has actually been pretty supportive of Richter, so to hear that is kind of a bummer.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, this dude did not have his life together. But yeah, so, the battle was about to rage.
Yes, and, you know, unfortunately for most of the externals, Apocalypse and Richter alone could pretty much destroy them. And we're gonna very quickly see that Richter single-handedly can kill more than half of this crew.
Yeah, Krull is, like, I think immediately killed.
Yes, he is immediately melted. Nicodemus is trying to talk sense into Apocalypse, but Apocalypse is like, hey, you have to die for the greater good.
Yeah, Richter has a little bit of brief pushback here where he's saying, I'm not going to let you do what you did with Rogue to me.
Yeah.
You can't scare us with this anymore. And Apocalypse is just like, yeah, I know.
I do like that as a response, and I do like that Richter is noticing that, like, hey, Apocalypse, you keep doing this with a lot of people, even Betsy. You push them to the brink just to see them get better. And I just like Apocalypse being, like, a really proud uncle going, like, yeah, that's the point.
Yeah.
You got it.
It's surprisingly effective.
It is. Rogue was able to channel the power of a gate. Betsy is getting better. Richter is controlling magma. It's working extremely well.
Oh, and also, I just forgot to mention, but he has summoned Selene and Gideon to his side as well, so not killing all of the externals.
Yeah, and we're gonna very quickly see why, because Apocalypse does need a specific number of mutants to finish the magic circle. And he can't kill all of them if he wants to do that. But before we get to that point, some of the externals also have extra powers on top of their mutant powers. As such, one of them turns into a massive dragon, just for a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes those pages more exciting.
Yes.
But yeah.
He's just dragon.
He just is a dragon, yep.
But don't worry.
I like how... you can see a part of his face kind of peel away.
Yes.
Yeah. See, Shogo can do this without like his face peeling away, so like I don't know why this dude.
I know, right?
No, Apocalypse is right.
Yeah. I mean, Shogo's not even a mutant and he can do it. Like, come on, man.
And granted he has to be in other world, but you know.
Minor details.
But yeah, Richter has now been Apocalypse pilled, and when they start sprouting off some nonsense about like how they can make ashes of the council, he's like, the rules have changed, you aren't special. And I'm like, man, Richter, you fell in line quick.
Oh, super quick. You were almost crushed by the caldera and magma because of Apocalypse, and already you're like, nah, he was still cool though. He did it for a good reason.
Just releasing a magma blast on all these dudes.
Yeah, the dragon melts, the rest of the externals melt. Everything is now as it should be. But Thankfully for Absalom, he seems to have lived through the fire. Apocalypse does debate killing him, but says he needs more people for the ritual, so he will live. And then we get another one of our favorite data pages as the Grimoire of Apocalypse is opened again. And we see a drawing and description of how this magic spell should work.
Yeah, rock crystals. I don't know. This kind of just, this was noise to me.
It was more of the unneeded ones because he did just explain how this works. And we've seen him do it before. You take the old bones, you put them in special places, you get people to channel it, and boom, you got a portal.
Yeah. It's all right. We got it, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, so everyone's taking a post here.
Yep, around their newly crystallized dead bodies, because apparently when you are ancient and you die, your bodies turn into, like, pink-purple rubies pretty quickly, which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, looks cool.
But three of the bodies kind of sprout off these massive crystal structures to the edge of the caldera, except for Kandra's. And that's because Apocalypse forgot, in the heat of the moment, that her soul is somewhere else completely.
Should have killed Absalom instead.
Should have killed him.
Like did we really need Gideon? Like,
I don't think so.
But yeah, so back in other world, Gambit's just kind of throwing that thing around.
Yep, where possibly could she be? Yeah. And Rogue and Gambit are kind of, you know, having this back and forth. And we quickly see that Kandra is able to talk to Gambit and is kind of like this ruby spirit around him. It seems she could talk to anyone who holds it, and she is very much trying to convince Gambit to leave the gem here so Apocalypse won't kill her.
Yeah, very flirty while doing this. Oh, yes.
It wouldn't surprise me if Kandra and Gambit, having both been in the Thieves Guild, did have a fling at some point. That seems like something both of them would do.
If that hasn't happened, I would be like a little bit surprised. That just feels like it would have.
So,
if anyone can tell us if Gambit and Kandra had a relationship, please email us at studyofx@gmail.com. But
yes, or your other favorite Gambit fact.
Gambit facts.
At studyofx@gmail.com.
Yeah.
But Rogue and Gambit do get spotted pretty quickly by other priests, and a rough chase begins. But before we get to see any of that, we're going to cut to Betsy and Saturnine. And through quite a lot of dialogue, we learn that even though Betsy is being as kind as she can be, Saturnine just does not want anything to do with her. She wants Brian and not her, because Brian as Captain Britain made running Otherworld pretty easy.
Yeah, and just very much like dismisses her as like a Captain Britain, just like you're a fluke. Like we had all these other Bryans when we had the Captain Britain corpse. Like there's just one of you.
Yeah, and to prove her point, she shows off the other Captain Britons that we saw about two issues ago, where it's Rogue, Gambit, Jubilee, and Richter with the title and the outfit on. They're currently trapped in crystals, but it's to prove her point that, hey, sometimes it's just wrong.
Yeah.
And throughout all of this, Saturnine does hint a bit again that there might be a war coming. One of the green priestesses last issue also made that prediction, so it seems like there's some rumblings of something coming. But before we can get much else into that, a alarm goes off.
I do like how we get to see the other Captain Britain costumes.
Yeah, yeah. These are cool costumes still.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably the only thing that registers in my brain in like the last 12 pages.
Yeah, that's
it's
fair.
Not, I'm still here.
Yeah.
I just don't have anything to say.
Yeah, there's a lot. There is a lot of stuff going on, and it's a lot of stuff that you don't fully have to remember, you know, like with all of the externals and everything, because most of them
are dead. Is there... So the thing I don't like here is we're just going down the inevitable road to the portal opening, and this is just like a lot of build up towards that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it
I don't think nothing even particularly interesting happens with the gem. It just eventually gets thrown into the thing and does its thing, presumably.
Yeah, the most interesting thing about the gem is that Gambit does it pretty easily when he specifically knows it's a favor for Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's and about
the seems
most.
To be the thing with this issues.
Yeah, is everybody everyone's, just kind of... Everybody's Apocalypse-pilled.
Yeah.
Yes.
Really, really willing to do Apocalypse's bidding for no reason.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's kind of where we end up here. Kandra tries her best to get Gambit not to do it, but Gambit does it. And yeah, we got our gate open.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
A thing will happen is what we end up on.
Yes. Yeah, there's like a lot of little stuff, but honestly, yeah, you can kind of just gloss right over it. You know, Kandra is for sure dead as the ritual is completed. And a couple of things happen pretty much right after the other. The four crystals on Krakoa are fully placed where they need to be, and then also very quickly make a crystal portal. Something at the Citadel seems to fire from the bottom of it. I'm not too sure what it is, but that also happens as a consequence of it, and that's sort of where we leave off.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the thing that bothers me the most is you could see the existence of the gem and Kendra speaking to Gambit as a potential kind of wrench in Apocalypse's plans. Like, you can ask yourself... I wonder how this is going to go, how this is not going to go all the way as Apocalypse expects it to. And then it just kind of does.
Mm-hmm.
All of that buildup of, you know, the allusion to Gambit's and Kendra's past and her doing this whole saving my soul into a gem thing, it kind of ends up being nothing. Might as well just died. When Richter attacked.
Yeah, it's odd. Like, I guess it's a good way to kind of like reaffirm like Gambit and Rogue are together, but like it's just like we already know that. Like,
what was the whole gem ritual thing for?
Yeah. I agree. I think the externals in general feel like a very convoluted way to get to this gate, and I don't know if you needed to do that.
I kind of like it. I think it's fun that it's like, hey, you guys, we're all buddies, right, for the last couple thousand years. I need to kill you for your bones so we can make a door.
Yeah.
I think it's fun.
Yeah, I guess I do like Apocalypse telling everyone you either sacrifice yourselves or I'm just going to kill you.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's fun.
Yeah, that is fun. But I do agree. I think the Kandra soul gem thing could have been done a lot differently.
I will also say I think there is something funny about this issue just being like everything's coming up Apocalypse. But
yes.
Yeah, it's silly.
I think it's funnier to look back upon than it is to actually read it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's more fun here discussing it than it is reading it.
And there is a lot of reading.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of dialogue.
Teenie Howard sure likes her dialogue.
Yeah. Which, hey, you know what? If it's coming from Apocalypse, keep writing. I love it.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
That's it. Yeah, any other closing thoughts for these handful of issues?
An hour 12 on the clock.
Hey.
On the clock? Okay.
Just what final, you said.
Final predictions. What is X of Swords going to be, Sergio?
I have no idea. I thought it had something to do with the Cerebro Sword.
Yeah.
But I'm... Now that there's that line about other things going on in the X... How did I forget what the previous issue was called?
X-Force.
X-Factor?
X-Factor?
X-Force?
X-Force? God. Excalibur?
Yeah.
There's an X in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Anyway, there was a throwaway line in X-Force about how other things were going on and then that allusion to X of Swords. So that's probably not it. I don't know. Is it going to be related to this portal thing that the apocalypse just opened. Who knows? Yeah. Stay tuned. I am still excited to see what's it gonna be.
Well, all right. Speaking of that, I do have the original press release for the announcement of this event. Do you want to know what it says?
Yeah, that's fun.
Okay.
Let's listen.
The announcement came at C2E2 in Chicago in February of 2020, so right before COVID lockdown the world. And its original release for this event was going to be in July. Oh, not quite there.
Chris, real quick. Do you have that picture that kind of went along with that? Okay. I think we should post that.
I am going to post that.
All right.
So let me read what it says here.
Okay.
Mutant Massacre, Age of Apocalypse, Messiah Complex. See, these are some of the most impactful and well-remembered X-Men stories. Now comes Ten of Swords to join the Pantheon. And it says here, threatened by powerful forces from the unknown, 10 mutants will rise up to defend their home. Arming themselves with legendary blades, both new and familiar, mutantkind will finally meet its mythical destiny, impacting the entire X-Men franchise and setting the stage for the future of mutantkind. 10 of Swords will be a modern X-Men epic that both longtime and new X-Men fans can't miss. And as part of that, they also released an image, which is 20 mutants with 20 different swords. And as I just read, only 10 mutants with 10 swords are going to be actually in the event. So I will definitely be posting this on our social medias. So you can take a look and see this wonderful piece of artwork where there's a whole big old range of mutants with a whole bunch of different swords.
Cool. Cyclops has a beam saber.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a really cool...
Storm Dust, too.
Yeah, she's got a cool one. I like Armor's armor sword.
Yeah, I'm kind
of... I'm not a big fan of Armor's armor sword or of Iceman Ice Sword.
It is a little simple compared to a lot of the others.
I think it's lazy. I think they should get their own swords. Do not skimp on the swords.
Even though Storm's is just a lightning sword?
She's got a pommel. It's got a handle.
That's true.
She's not making that.
That's true. That is very true. Yeah. So, but now that you have seen this and heard the solicit, do you have any other guesses what this event might be?
No, not really. It does reference like a mythical fate, mm-hmm. and that kind of reminds me of Excalibur. But beyond that, no, not really. I'll see what it is when I get there.
Oh, all right.
You can see Betsy in this picture.
So, for the next episode that we do, second to next episode that we do, the three issues we will be covering will be X-Men number 12, X of Swords Creation, and X-Factor number 4. But before that, we got a little bit of a bonus episode, I think, coming our way. I think one week after this episode is released, so next week, it's not going to be the 2 weeks, we will... I believe what we're going to do is have our next episode release that's covering the comics where it would be released, so there's no delay there. But next week, we will be covering episodes 1 through 5 of X-Men 97.
Woo! I'm really excited, because
hell yeah.
I have not been watching them, and then I binged all of them because I was waiting, and I'm very excited to talk about them. I understand why Sergio kept asking.
Yeah, it was important.
I am very excited to talk about those because it's really good. They did a really good job with that show.
They sure did. Yes, I'm very excited to talk about it.
Yeah. So wait, we will be getting into spoilers there. So feel free to watch along.
Or don't and just enjoy the spoilers. It's entirely up to you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously spoilers. I don't think we could do this episode. I don't think we could do this podcast without spoilers. No. But like, yeah, just as a warning, it will be different from the regularly scheduled programming. You're free to just skip it if, you know, you don't want to listen to that. But that's coming out next week.
Mm-hmm. And it'll be fun. And then we will also cover the last 5 episodes of X-Men 97 when those are all done. So whenever that'll happen, we'll let you guys know, because it might be at least a month, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what Disney Plus's release schedule is.
At the time of this recording, the 7th episode is coming out this week, so we still have at least 4 more weeks until the show's over.
Okay.
So soon, not immediately.
Yeah. But besides that, thank you for listening. If you have reached this point, thank you so much. If you could leave us a review on your podcasting app of choice, that would be great. It helps get us out there and find some more people to go along with this mutant journey with us.
Yeah, Apple specifically. If you leave us a review, we will read it aloud.
Yes. And if you leave a review on Google Podcasts, I'm going to ask how you did that, because that no longer exists. So it has to be Apple or Spotify, I guess. But Apple's really the big one.
Yeah, please do it on Apple. Also, we will only read it aloud if it's a 5-star review. Don't leave us a 3-star review.
Yeah, and if you leave us a 4-star one, we'll talk about it, but not on the podcast.
Yeah.
But if you do want to follow this podcast on social media, you can find it on X, also known as Twitter, on Tumblr, and on Blue Sky. All of them are Study of X. And if you have any questions, comments, your favorite Gambit fact, or perhaps what you think Ten of Swords might be, go ahead and send us an email at studyofx@gmail.com, and we might just read it here on the podcast. And
God, Ten of Swords.
It's X of Swords. I'm sorry, I can't. I don't think I'm going to be able to. I'm going to keep saying X of Swords.
No, it's fine.
That is correct, even.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. But if you are looking for me on social media, you can find me at Sawneeks, that is S-A-W-N-E-E-K-S, on Blue Sky. Not terribly active, but I am there. And Sergio and Tim are both in the no space, that is anti-social media. However, Sergio, if they wanted to try and send you a message that had spoilers for Ten of Swords, where would they try and send it?
God, I need to be prepared for these prompts now.
You have to. I've been doing them every episode.
Yeah, I guess just throw them into a portal without crystals.
Mm-hmm. They will go into the eternal caldera. The caldera.
Yeah, I'm just hanging there.
Okay. Well, have fun. I hope it's comfortable. And Tim, if they want to ask you what your favorite legendary Marvel sword is, where should they send that?
Don't ask me that.
Okay, but what if they're not asking you? What if they're going to just tell you?
Don't tell me that. Ah. I don't want to hear it. I don't care about your favorite sword. I only care about axes, and you're going to have to go on a very lengthy quest to figure out where to send that. I believe it starts from trying to form a gate to Otherworld. So, yeah, I don't know. Best of luck. It's open world, so you gotta kind of just figure that out as you go.
Right, and I don't think they've written the guide for that yet, so that's gonna be tough.
Yep.
But that's alright. Maybe you can find Apocalypse's and that can help you out.
Yeah.
But until next time, later, mutants.
Bye.
Bye.